and Ziploc that. Right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right. Now I'm your favorite rapper's favorite rapper. Hey, now I'm your favorite trapper's favorite trapper. The absolute truth, yeah, no joke. Who me, I'm.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jeezy. And folks, welcome into the Trap Draw. Randy here. Love this episode. We are breaking down our brackets. The NCAA men's basketball tournament is beginning Thursday. I don't recognize the first four as round one, so I'll say round one, still Thursday, Friday, this weekend, round two. And of course, I don't want to shortchange the women. The women's tournament, I think, is going to be excellent again this year. Of course, Caitlin Clark, probably the biggest name in all of college basketball at the minute. Her Iowa Hawkeyes are going to be in action. You have two SEC teams, South Carolina, which went undefeated again, and LSU, who do not like each other. LSU, of course, is the defending national champion. Their tournament kicks off this week as well. Because I'm doing a men's bracket, this show is going to be about the men's side, and my guest to help me make sense of it all is ESPN's Seth Greenberg. We're going to get to him in just a second. Before we do, I want to thank our sponsor today, and that is our good friends at Roback. Roback Activewear. We are ready for spring golf thanks to Roback. Fresh off the release of their Azalea collection, we are officially ready for those really big events in golf this spring. You know which ones I'm talking about. And if you haven't seen it before, the Azalea collection designs are incredible and just make this time of year that much sweeter. The Roback Performance Polos, they're the best polos we own. They have the best crisp collars that don't lose their shape. The designs are incredible, and the fit is far better than the old boxy polos. Trust us when we say they are worth checking out. And you all know they have the best performance Q-zips too. They are the only Q-zips we wear, the definition of versatile. These Q-zips are made to keep you warm for an early round while you look sharp and remain comfortable. And this is a new product. Roback also just launched their Looper shorts made with belt loops. These shorts are ideal for the course and versatile to be worn off the course as well. Just in time for spring, these shorts are a must for the warm weather. The material is so comfortable and easy to move in. They will keep up with every swing. If you haven't already, it's now time to load up on some Roback, both for yourself and for others. Head on over to roback.com where you can use the code TRAP, T-R-A-P, for a generous 20% off your first order through the end of this week. Roback is spelled R-H-O-B-A-C-K. Roback.com. Get 20% off all bottoms, Q-zips, hoodies, and more with code TRAP. Get ready for golf season with Roback. Can't thank them enough for being an awesome sponsor. And now without further ado, here's my conversation with Coach Seth Greenberg. Joining me now, I think it's fair to say it's an annual tradition at this point. I believe this is maybe the third year we've done this, Coach. But Seth Greenberg, college basketball analyst, broadcaster for ESPN. Before going to work at ESPN, he spent 34 years in the coaching profession, the last 22 of which as a head coach. He had stops at Long Beach State, South Florida, and Virginia Tech, where he was a two-time ACC Coach of the Year. Coach Greenberg, this is the busiest week of the year for you, I'm sure, so I appreciate you taking the time. It's great to talk to you again, but I got to ask you, we got to start with a little golf. Tell me how your 2023 golf game was. How was last year for you?
The game was good, but we had a little kind of detour and roadblock, and then I broke my leg. This is a great story, actually. Yeah, I went and gave a talk at Nevis to an insurance company and decided to go play the Four Seasons course. And as I was walking down the deck of that court to get to the course, my golf shoe got caught in a slat. So as I was stepping down, I had to jump seven stairs down. All my weight went on my left leg. You would appreciate this and have a greater respect for me, but I just thought it was a bruise. You know, it started to ache, so I threw a little Advil in there. Yeah. All right. I had my bag on my shoulder. I literally blocked myself from falling over something. Showed a great deal of athleticism, quite honestly. And so I took the Advil. I played. I mean, I was playing with the guy that invited me. He was paying me to speak at his event. Played, flew from there to DC, visit my my daughter and her husband, went and played two rounds there, Advil, came back, and it was not good. It was not good. So I finally went over to the orthopedic guy, and he basically said, who's an avid golfer, I play golf with all the time, and Doc basically said, one more round, and the condyle of your tibia would have been snapped off, and you would have had full knee surgery.
Oh,
fortunately for me, I was in a big brace for about 8-10 weeks, got healthy enough to go to Colorado, which was really, really a lot of fun. Played Big Sky, and a member guest, a good friend of mine, which was a blast, unbelievable course. Yeah. But from that point on, I was playing a little hurt, but overall, you know, I kept my 10 handicap, and you know, at our course, that means you get a pop on 9 or 8 or 9 red because I played with all these young guys and 18. So it was an eventful season.
Well, God, I'm sorry to hear about that.
It was eight weeks. I was 6 weeks basically on a cane, 7 weeks on a cane. We had to fly a bunch of places during the course of the time. My wife actually ordered me a wheelchair to get me to the gate, which was maybe the most embarrassing part of my life. But which there was pictures that my wife sent immediately to my daughters, and they have surely got a kick out of that. But so I made a comeback. I made a big comeback. Now I think I'm healthy. I'm walking, doing all the stuff I'm doing. I'm actually thinking maybe getting some new irons eventually, and life is good.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. Yeah, we're looking forward to 2024. Then are we still hitting cups? Are we still in a hitting cups mindset, Coach?
Hitting cups.
Yeah, are we putting everything out? I feel like last year I was talking to you. You were bemoaning all these guys picking up shorties.
No. The LFG group does not pick up putts.
Yeah, good.
It's not in the play-in for that little Friday Saturday game is a little bit too high to pick up putts.
Okay. All right. Well,
put it in a hole.
Yeah,
if someone says, is that good? The answer will be not bad.
I hope spring finds its way in the Northeast, you know, once you're through with basketball, and I hope you can get out there and play a lot of golf on your healthy leg. Hey, before we get into your bracket, I just wanted to ask you a few things generally about the state of college basketball. Let me ask you this, very broad, but in your opinion, where do we think the product is going into the 2024 tournament? Do you generally like where the product of men's college basketball stands, or are there a lot of areas that you think need addressed and perhaps some improvement?
Well, we got to figure out the NIL and transfer portal. I mean, and they go hand in hand. I mean, you can't have, I don't care what enterprise you have. You say, you know, like Jay Billis will say, this is professional sports. Well, it's professional sports. There's no professional sports organization that has year-to-year free agency.
Right, right.
I mean, like we have year-to-year free agency. Right? The portal opened up today, I think. It's 500 guys are in the portal. By the end of the week, we'll have 1,500 guys in the portal. That's four players on a team. Four players on a team with three guys graduating leaves only six scholarship players left. Maybe it might even get worse. And what's happening, and you notice, Randy, it goes that the Division IIs are getting pilfered by the low majors. I mean, the low Division Ones. The low Division Ones are getting pilfered by obviously the mid-majors. The mid-majors are getting absolutely destroyed. What it's doing is, in terms of level of play, you know, we don't have a great group of, you know, one-bid league teams that can really do any damage in tournament. You know why? It's real simple. Because everyone's taking the players. Once a guy has a good freshman year, boom, he's going into the portal. He's out the door. So there's the problem, number one. Number two is we got to have contracts. We're going to have to do something in that nature. Because it's not NIL. It's not a name, image, likeness. There are a couple of guys, a couple of programs. You know, the Power Fives can have that. But big picture, it's pay for play. I mean, let's call it what it is. It just aggravates with, oh, it's name. No, it's not name, image, like this. It's pay for play. Call it what it is. Collectors are pay for play. They're not sustainable. They're just not sustainable. They're going to have to find outside income, and that's going to be a problem. Then the last thing is just, you know, the conferences. The conferences, there's no regionality to conferences anymore. There's no rhyme or reason to the conference. When Stanford and Cal and SMU are joining the ACC, I mean, it makes no sense. So what we've got to understand is we're going to have 20 and 25 team conferences. So when we move forward, everybody says, oh, you can't expand the NCAA. It went from, you know, went from 16 to 32 to 64 to 68, and other times in between. And you know what? It's always good. We're going to have to, and this is my idea, we play these first four games. All right. Well, you know what we're going to need? We're going to need four regions of first four games so that the winners of those games can go right into the region, right into the bracket without travel. And then that's going to be the 16 lowest seeded one bid leagues. Because I'll tell you what, those four power conferences, they're going to be playing 24 and 26 game conference schedules, and you're going to see a lot of 13 and 13 records because there are going to be no rocket chair games. Yep. So why are you putting a 13 and 13 team in the tournament? I'll tell you why, because the quality of the opponent each and every night. So they're going to want more than nine bids. They're going to not want more than five bids. The Big East got three bids. The ACC was lucky to get five bids. The Mountain West got six bids. The Big 12 got eight. And what they did was they did a great job of manipulating the net to improve their overall opportunities for quad one wins. So there's going to be changes. The game's in a good place. You know, like the pace of play is good. Style of play is good. More guys are returning because of pay for play, which is good. But there's going to be change. Look, in life, there's change. There's change in your industry. There's change in our industry. There's change in every industry possible. The whole idea is you must have agility. Any good business has agility. And college basketball is no different.
Who is leading? Who are the voices or who are the people that are going to shape college basketball? Is it the power conference athletic directors? The conference commissioners.
Okay. Yeah, the athletic directors and commissioners. I think Dan Gavitt should have a bigger voice. And then there's some conferences that have lost their voices. Like you look at the ACC. Who's the voice of the ACC?
Right. No, I couldn't tell you.
Who's the voice? Yeah. It's not Kay. It's not Roy. It's not, you know, Jim who wanted to be heard. It's not they don't have a voice. SEC has a voice. They have John Calipari. You know, Big 12 has a voice. You know, they got Bill Self. The ACC does not have a voice. You know, right now, the voice of college basketball is going to be changing over the 8 to 10 years. Like I just talked to Danny Hurley. Danny Hurley needs to become the next voice of college basketball. He's not afraid to state an opinion and take a strong stand. He's obviously an incredibly talented coach. But we need our sport to have a greater voice, and each league has to have a voice that can be heard and listened to. And I think that's the one thing. When people talk about players, I think our sport needs a greater voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. Coach, I grew up, my heart lies with the mid-majors. I grew up watching mid-major basketball. It's hard though to be a fan of mid-major basketball. I mean, you just said it. And any really, really good player is more than likely going to get poached, and maybe he's around a year or two. Putting your coaching hat back on, and I found it really interesting to think about the shift in team building that perhaps we're seeing. Where mid-major coaches, is it even worth it to try to go and recruit, you know, a stellar incoming class of freshmen, or are they better served just concentrating almost exclusively on the portal? And I'm thinking Wade at McNeese State. How quickly
yeah,
you can?
I mean, he did it through. You know, he had name, image, and likeness, and you know, Will Wade has ways to entice players. I mean, yeah. You know, yeah, some things is just too strong-assed than others. I mean, just, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is. But like to me, if I was a mid-major coach, I would treat it like a junior college. And I would tell the AD, I'm interviewing, I'm treating this like a junior college. I'm going to tell a kid, you know what, you come here, we're going to develop your game, we're going to get you so good that you're going to be able to play anywhere in the country. And if you want to, I'll pick up the phone, I'll make any call you want. On the other hand, you might say, you've gotten so good because you've been in this environment of player development and understanding how to play, and you're getting an opportunity to play. You're gaining confidence, and maybe you can get where you want to go. I had Brian Russell. I had Lucius Harris. I had Joaquin Hawkins. I had James Cotton. I can list the guys I put in the league and say, you know what? You might want to just stay here, be a big fish in a small bowl or a smaller bowl, and you know, and improve, and you can get there no matter what, because no matter where you are, you're going to be found. You can get there. It's the television contracts. It's the NIL money. You know, it's all those things. But I would treat it like a junior college. For the guys that say, look, there are so many high school players that are being under recruited from the high majors because the high majors are only trying to get the top 75, right? Because if not, for them, it's even worse. You get a guy in the top 100, he thinks he comes in, he thinks he's supposed to play, he doesn't play, he's transferred. So I'd rather have a guy for 2 years, develop him, get him to buy in, and then, you know, at least roll a dice and see if he's going to stick around. So, like the Kentuckys and those people, they're not taking a guy in the, you know, under like 175. The whole key is retention. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, like to me with the collectives, if I'm mid-major, I'm using all my money for retention. I'm not using my money to acquire talent. It's to retain my talent. The problem is when guys go into the transfer portal and want to transfer up, it's all about money. Right. Who's going to give me the best deal? Like, no one's talking. Here's the static around college basketball today is that's my biggest problem, because winning isn't the priority sometimes. Because you got the workout guy, you got your grassroots coach, you got your parents that think they can monetize you, whether it's through NIL to put you in the NBA. You know, you've got your social media obligations. You've got working on your brand. You've got school, maybe. You would think that. Where does winning come into the equation? Like, where does, like, damn it, I'm going to be a winning player. I'm going to do all the dirty work. All right, I'm going to be a winning player. Whatever role coach gives me, I'm buying in. It's hard. It's hard. There's so many things that go ahead of winning, and there's so many things that go ahead of the original idea was actually getting an education. Mm-hmm. Like visiting the academic support services, finding the major, going through the diligent ability to show, hey, I can get you from point A to B. Point B, I'm going to help build a bridge so that when your basketball career is over, you have a chance to have a life be successful away from basketball. Those conversations aren't happening anymore. And that's a problem, big picture, for the young people that are playing, because they all think they're pros. They're not pros. It's the most exclusive club in the world. Right. Where does education fit in all this thing? Because when guys start transferring, they lose credits, and you're going to see graduation rates go down.
Yeah, you bring up great points. I'm just thinking. So I graduated from Miami University in Ohio. Like I said, mid-major basketball program. They had a recruiting class this year. Five freshmen, heavy minutes. You know, went 9-9 in Mid-American Conference play. Decent year. You know, if this were 20 years ago, I'd be really excited. Hey, we got a nice core. Let's see how these guys grow over the next 3 years. I'm excited. And all I could think about was, you know, I've just been checking the portal, exactly, trying to figure out, okay, which one of these guys is leaving, what's going to happen. I just feel like it's really hard to be a fan sometimes of college basketball, because you never know who's going to be on the team year to year. I don't know. I hope we can, whatever the solutions are, I feel like we got to get there quickly, because in my opinion, I feel like men's college basketball, at least, is really losing ground. But maybe I'm just a bit too pessimistic.
We need more than a Band-Aid. We need more than a Band-Aid. We need to really look at it. It's not, you know, some people say, oh, it's real simple. It's not simple. It's very complicated. There's no set easy answer. Like, if I'm a low major, like, Miami's a solid mid-major. The MAC is a great conference. I mean, and the MAC's gotten beaten up from people losing players, but if I'm a low major and like everything that's going on in college athletics, there are going to be a lot of programs that end up in club sports or Division III because, you know, I mean, no money's made. Fairleigh Dickinson, we had a great win against Purdue. But really, the economy of, you know, Northeast Conference, come on. I mean, let's be serious. They don't make any money. They don't make any money from their gate. The revenue that they generate is so minimal in relation to what is taken away from the institution, it becomes a scary venture. If we're going to treat it like a business, then, you know, a lot of things are going to go away. Yeah. You know, non-revenue sports are going to go away because there isn't enough money. You know, only certain women's sports will remain because there isn't enough money. And that's real. And we can say it's not. I had a dinner a couple of weeks during our game day shows. I'm not going to mention with two athletic directors. If you hear the finances for not only non-revenue sports, but for to run a women's basketball program, if you're not even like high level, they're losing millions of dollars. even at the most successful programs. So, you know, people talk about private equity companies coming in and buying football, the football team, or when those things happen, Randy, here's my question. If it's a private equity company, say you own a private equity company, you see this business over here and it's losing millions of dollars. You're cutting something.
Yeah. No, you don't want losing revenue centers to operate very long. That's for sure. What a mess.
It's crazy. But you know what? It's the NCAA tournament. It's going to be absolutely
I know.
I mean, more unranked teams beat ranked teams during the course of the season. More first seeds in their conference tournaments got bounced early in their So what does that say? Well, you know what? The NCAA tournament is basically going to be an extension of that. What we saw in the conference tournaments is a microcosm of what we saw all season long. And in the NCAA tournament, we're going to see the same things once we get past the second round.
Yeah.
Or the first round, I should say.
All right. I need you to change my mind about one more thing. I'm getting a little discouraged with I blame it on the 30-second shot clock, and I could be totally wrong, but I just watch, you know, I enjoy watching college basketball. Maybe I'm just old. Maybe this is just typically what you do. You remember when you were young that the times were better. I don't see a lot of variety in the way teams are trying to play basketball, and I feel like that's probably driven by the 30-second shot clock, where it forces a lot of teams to kind of play the same style. I just think with a 45-second shot clock, you could maybe see more contrast in styles. But I could be totally off base. I wanted to run that theory by you. Do you find that
everyone runs ball screen offense? I'll tell you who plays different offensively. UConn.
Please. Yeah.
UConn plays differently. Ball movement, people movement, misdirection. I always say Danny Hurley's teams, they play defense like they're from Jersey City. They play offense like they're from FIBA.
I love it.
I mean, that's just the way it is. Yeah, a lot of people get stuck in the high ball. You know, the funny thing is everyone wants to run ball screens. You see it in high school. You see it in middle school. You see it in junior college. Here's the deal. You're a basketball fan. What's the object of a ball screen?
Well,
I'm not trying to quiz you here. I'm just
No. I would just say to create an offensive advantage. Perhaps there's a matchup. Yeah. You know, you're hunting a certain defender. You put him in the ball screen, and all of a sudden he finds himself guarding the ball, and it's to the offense's advantage.
That's pretty close. It is to get an advantage. It's get two people to play the ball. You screen unless they're switching, which is exactly what you said. Is to create a matchup. Now you create the switch, you roll it, whether you're going to post someone or you're going to back and attack that guy off the dribble, right? Or to get two to play you. So if you come off a ball screen and get two to play you, then it's 4-3 behind. That's when you get long rolls. Well, you get a long roll, then someone's got a tagged roller and you skip it and it's a three, or you drive the closeout. You get a short roll. That means basically the guy's rolls into a little bit of a pocket, all right? People stay, and that becomes a playmaker. Or you're in drop, something you're playing against drop coverage. Drop coverage is kind of what Creighton does, where you come off the ball screen, a guy guarding the screener, which would be Kalkbrenner. He plays down, and he plays almost like a one-man center fielder. All right, so now you've got to fight over the top of that screen. All right, you're forcing the guy into a big seven-footer, and also any type of cutting action the Kalkbrenner can guard, plus the big that rolls can't get behind you. So here's the deal. If you don't have a guy coming off that ball screen that can play, basically make two play him, who cares? If you don't have a team that can, everyone goes, well, you know, you got to play with spacing. Well, what creates spacing?
I would say the ability to shoot the ball would be the ultimate spacing.
Yeah, exactly. So if you don't have good shooters, what happens? You have no spacing. You can stick those guys in the corner all you want and say, good to see you, big fella. Yeah. Nice to see you over there. I'll come and get you when you get the ball and you take two dribbles towards me.
Yeah.
When you think about Duke and the struggles they're having, they're spacing Mark Mitchell out in the corner. Last few games, they said, hi, Mark, good to see you, but we're not guarding you over there. We're going to play right in here and help on the post and help on Filipowski when he dribbles and spins so we can get a piece of it. We're going to help on Jeremy Roach, or we're going to help on Jared McCain, as they're coming off the lane, we're going to help, and then we're going to come back to you. Eventually, Mark will see you when you get a little closer to the basket. So, I mean, like, I agree. We need more ball and people movement. The clock's only going to go lower. Everyone thinks we should be playing with a FIBA clock, or then we think we should play with an NBA clock. You know, high school needs to get down to 30 seconds. The idea of ball and people movement, college guys take good shots and miss them. NBA guys take bad shots and make them.
Amen to that.
I mean, like, yes, we've got it. You're right. I just think we're a copycat sport. You think about the history of our sport. When Rick Pitino was really successful, Providence and Kentucky pressing and running and shooting the three, that became a fad. Mm-hmm. When Judd Heathcote won the national championship with Bird, it was the 2-3 matchup zone. You know, now it's flow. Everyone's playing flow, which really means you're coming down the floor. It's a quick ball reversal into a drag ball screen or a stagger screen or some type of action, and you're playing off concepts. All those things are great if you have the personnel to do it. The essence of coaching is to put your team in a position to play to their strengths. And too many people get caught up in basically the fashion of coaching and forget, whether it's offensively or defensively, to put your players in position to play to their strengths. So they're not showing people what they can't do, but they're showing people what they can do. And that's kind of the bigger problem for our game.
Yeah. Love that. Love you breaking it down like that, Coach. All right, let's talk big picture NCAA tournament. Is anybody in the class of UConn, or are they kind of a cut above everybody else, in your opinion?
I think they're a little bit above right now. On their best day, they're above everyone else. There are teams and styles of play that can give them a problem. Like, there's one there are two in their bracket, actually, Iowa State and Auburn, because they're physical, they pressure the basketball, they can wear you down, they've got legitimate size, they can keep you on one side of the floor, they can, you know, pressure maybe Tristan Newton, get him a little frustrated, get up and under Cam Spencer, which you can get up underneath him. I'm not sure you can shake him up because the guy he's a little hard-headed, he's Danny Hurley's version of a basketball player. I mean, he's got some of the same stuff in him. Iowa State keeps you on the side, very physical, very aggressive. So those type of teams, like the one team that I thought hurt him, you know, Klingon got hurt in that game. Seton Hall got up underneath him. All right, when Seton Hall beat him. And then Creighton beat him by chasing him off those screens and playing Cockburn as a center fielder. So, yeah, I go watch him practice all the time. I love him. I've never seen him have bad practice. The pace of that practice, the teaching in that practice, the accountability, the standard it's set. I've sat in on their film session after they lost to Creighton, and it was an hour film session. And I'll tell you one thing, the paint on the walls were being just destroyed, but in a positive teaching way.
Yeah.
In a teaching that, like, Danny Hurley is one of the top two or three coaches in college basketball. It's not even close in terms of building a program, recruiting, evaluating, coaching, setting the standard, not afraid to coach his team. See, that's the other problem we have. We got guys that are afraid to coach their teams because they're afraid of the portal.
Mm hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mentor a bunch of young coaches. I say, hey, this is real simple. If that guy won't let you coach him, then he can't help you win.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're worried about coaching him and coaching him hard because he's going to go into the portal, let him go into the portal. You can get a guy better than him if he buys in. Because you got to buy into a role. You got to buy into what a winning player would be. So I think it's UConn. Arizona is not there. But they're talented. North Carolina's right in that conversation. I think Purdue, despite the loss to Wisconsin, is right behind. Certain teams will potentially bother them, just like certain teams will bother Houston. If you keep them off the glass and don't turn it over, there'll be teams that will bother Houston. Like the A&M could be their second game. You know, A&M, if they win their game, all right, they have two great guards. They rebound 40% of their misses. They can attack though Jamal Shedd and LJ Cryer and Emmanuel Sharp, they can match up right there. So this thing comes down to matchups and style of play and imposing your identity on the opponent.
Okay, you mentioned Purdue. Do you put
they any are not Purdue? They're Purdue.
I'm reading Matt Painter might be coaching for his job. You know, if he doesn't get out of the first weekend, do you?
What are you reading? Wait a second. Whoa. That's like saying if Scotty Scheffler loses two tournaments in a row and shows up the Masters. Oh my God, Scotty might lose his card.
But there is something to it. I do think Purdue fans are needing some type of run. I think it's fair. For whatever reason,
coaching
that they
for his
haven't.
Job.
Goodness, that's harsh. But I do think the seat's going to get a little warm if they find themselves losing in that second round. Any other coaches though that you think are under a little bit of pressure? You know, the other one that shocked me. I was just going to say the other one that shocks me, and I don't think he's under any job security issues, but. You know, Shaka Smart has not gotten past round two since that initial run to the Final Four with VCU. That really surprised me.
Yeah, if something happened with Shaka Smart, he'd have 10 guys offering him a job. But
yeah.
Look, Shaka Smart's a terrific coach. Now, Tyler Kolek, his health will be the key. I mean, if Tyler Kolek's there, they're a different team. He's a shot creator. He's a leader. He can score. He takes pressure off Osu Igudori. He takes pressure off of Jones. I mean, it changes the whole dynamic of their team, and plus everyone moves up down a spot on the scatter report. But let's get back to Matt Painter. Matt Painter, I want you to go and look at the non-conference wins and his record over the last 4 years, and then compare it to anyone else in the country.
It's fantastic.
I like Purdue. I think Braden Smith, as long as he's healthy. Now if he's not healthy, they could get bopped. I don't think they'll get bopped the first draft, but they could get bopped because without Braden Smith is Aaron Craft with a jumper. You know, Chucky Hepburn went right by him in that game against Wisconsin. Braden Smith is a tough dude. And he makes the game easier for Lawyer and Gillis. And I do like the addition of Lance Jones. So I like them. Look, who has the most pressure? Who is the one program that trends more than anyone else? Another quiz. This is good. Now I'm putting you on the hot seat. If the guy has gas, people are worried about it. What's the one program? Blue.
Oh, Asian. Calipari. Okay, I was thinking John Shire could do very well to have a deep tournament run. But yes, you're exactly right. Calipari is yes.
All right, and he has the most wins in the history of current coaching has most wins in college basketball, number one. But he may go to the Final Four and look too easy. All right. Pressure. Yeah, the pressure. There's always pressure. Now, he's not getting fired, but there's always pressure on you at Kentucky. And it's different. Like, think about it. I said this on First Take the other day. Like, we were talking about, the pressure that he's under. Bill Self can get knocked out in the first round of the Big 12 tournament by 100 points. No big deal. Tony Bennett could not call a timeout give a foul when he has two fouls to give, and NC State banks one in and goes on and wins the ACC tournament. No one hears anything. Rick Barnes can get beat in the first round of the SEC and lose multiple times. Nah, don't worry about it. You're all right, Rick. Life is good. Calipari. If he loses a game, he forgot how to coach. First, he doesn't play fast enough. Now he doesn't guard anyone. Now there's always something. So, and he's done a lot to himself because, quote unquote, one and done, and maybe he hasn't gotten old enough like college basketball. But, in college basketball today, everyone's under pressure.
Yeah.
One good season gets you two.
Yeah.
In the back of the day, back in the day, you take over a job, you want to stabilize it first year, you want to show progress your second year, you want to play in the tournament your third or fourth year. Now, you don't get that thing turned around 2 years, you don't make the cut.
Very true.
Becoming like golf.
Yeah.
I still don't understand that either, by the way, the whole cut thing. Just don't understand. Like, if we're it's like only playing two quarters. We're going to play the first two quarters, and then we'll see what happens. And then, by the way, golf, your sport's crazy because then the first two rounds, thanks for coming. You get a handshake and you get a bottle of Gatorade on your way out.
Yeah.
And you got to return a courtesy car.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of stuff going on in golf, Coach. We could spend, that could be a 2-hour podcast there. All right, let me ask you this. Favorite players, for folks that are, you know, more casual NCAA fans, they're tuning in. Who are a few of the players that they should seek out and watch this opening weekend?
Tucker DeVries, Drake, terrific. His dad's the coach. His dad was an assistant at Creighton with Greg McDermott. He's got a little Dougie McDermott in his game. Tyler Dennegaard from Boise State. I'm just giving you a couple guys, little outside the box guys.
Love it.
Boise State's pretty good. Coach's son, Max Rice, very good player. Degenhart's very, very good. That'll be an interesting, quote unquote, first round, whatever you want to call it. But those two guys are really, really good. KJ Simpson, another guy that's going to play in the opening round of Colorado. Left hand, a little guard, really, really explosive scorer. They got Cody Williams on that team also, who's going to be a lottery pick. Really good player. Be kind of a fun player to watch. Jonell Davis, Florida Atlantic, had a great run last year. He's basically ISO Joe Johnson. I mean, you give him the ball in the wing, he's going back him down, jump up. Fun player to watch. Really, really good player. I'm trying to go some outside the box. Marcellinus's son, Augustus Marcellinus at St. Mary's. Really good. Went from a sixth man at St. Mary's to MVP, the most outstanding player of the West Coast Conference. That team, Aiden Mahaney gets the hype. This is the guy that should get the hype. Donovan Dent at New Mexico. New Mexico in general. New Mexico's team. You got Baby Patino coaching him. Baby Mashburn. Baby House. All right, Jaden House, Eddie House's son. And then you got a guy named Donovan Dent, who's a 6'4 guard, point guard, who's the best of them all, and a guy that's last name is Toppin, but no relation. So okay. I think New Mexico is a sneaky, they're sneaky now against Clemson, who has a really good player in PJ Hall. Let me just go. Big concern on Kansas, by the way, with all those injuries. Just big picture.
Yeah.
Everyone knows about Dillingham. Everyone knows about Reed Shepard. Reed Shepard is just a joke. He's got such a great feel for the game. It's ridiculous. Everyone knows about Jamal Shedd, who's the best two-way guard in the tournament, for sure, from Houston. So those are just some outside-the-box names. Because I think, Boo Booey, I'm not sure how long they're going to hang around, but Boo Booey at Northwestern, half of their team is out because of injury. Yep. They lost Ty Berry, but Boo Booey is a bad man. I mean, He is a bad man. So Northwestern, I'm not sure they can get by Florida Atlantic, but I love me some Boo Booey.
All right, before I ask you for your specific picks, last question. Did you have an issue with any teams that got left out of this tournament?
Oh, the Bid Steelers killed it.
Yeah.
The Bid Steelers made the Bid Steelers took all the pressure off the committee.
Yeah, they did.
Because there were so many bids stolen that, like, you can't get in a debate with Indiana State. You know, Pitt could have a little bit of an argument. The Big East only getting three teams in could have an argument.
Yeah.
But a lot of those bids went away. And I know it. I lived it. And that's, you see those, like, I was joking. We're sitting in D.C. watching the ACC tournament during our halftimes, and I'm seeing some of these teams get knocked out. And I would always turn to look at Freeze. I'd go, because yeah. Someone's bubble just burst.
Yeah, yeah.
And like we literally spent 2 days, and I'd go, RD, because that's what happened.
I wasn't surprised Indiana State got left out, but I was disappointed, and I think there exists a timeline where the nation would have really fallen in love with Robbie Avila.
Oh, baby Jokic.
Yeah. That's a shame that, more of America won't get to watch him play, but they are in the NIT, so if folks really, if you're really jonesing for some basketball, certainly check that out.
I'll be in the NIT studio tonight.
Nice.
And tomorrow night.
Yeah, yeah. It's too bad what's happening with the NIT. I wish that was still more of an institution and teams really took that. No, you're shaking your head. Okay.
Well, no, I'm not shaking my head. I'm saying that it's not a Madison Square Garden. Nothing against Indianapolis, but it's not a Madison Square Garden. That's one carrot. Yeah. Number two is with the culture of college basketball, and it isn't that you don't have time to recruit. It's more so you have 13 guys on scholarship. Say you have three seniors. Boom, they're all right. You know, and if you have three seniors, if they're not playing, all right, they might want to play. If you didn't make the NCAA tournament, there is a good chance that the guys that are returning already have their name in the portal if you're a mid-major. Yeah. I think what they should make the NIT, I think it should be 32 teams or whatever, and it should be a mid-major only tournament.
Would love that. Now you're
make
speaking
it like a
me.
National major tournament, not nothing against the CBI, but be a national mid-major tournament. And so the teams that didn't get in, they get a chance to play against, like, because those teams would be excited to play in it. St. John's, you know, Rick Pitino, why didn't he play in it? It's real simple. He can talk about recruiting, he can talk about other stuff. He's got momentum going. He can say, we got screwed not getting the NCAA tournament. He's got momentum. You lose in the first round of the NIT, and all of a sudden, you know what happens? Right? You lose all your momentum.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's just not as sexy as it used to be.
No. God, I'm all for a mid-major tournament, Coach. You're speaking my language now. All right, let's dive into your bracket. I know you're a one bracket guy, correct? This is the bracket of truth. Let's just start in the East region. That's UConn's region. I see Auburn as a fascinating potential matchup. In my opinion, of teams that maybe had a gripe about where they were seated, their statistical profile, I think you could make a case perhaps deserve to be on that three seed line at least. Any upsets, any teams to watch? I really like BYU and Drake, but I'm curious who you're bullish on and who eventually you have coming out of there.
I got UConn coming out of there. I am bullish on Drake. I think Drake's really good. I think he's really good. They got legitimate size. They got a go-to player. Enright's a good point guard. I like him. You know, Florida Atlantic I was going to like until I saw him in UConn's bracket. So now I don't like him so much. BYU is fascinating to me. They were awful in the Big 12 tournament. Yet I like them. They play differently. Flow, speed, pass, great cutting team, 7-8 starters, you know, Spencer Johnson, Jackson Robinson, the Egyptian magician passing at the top of the circle. I have, and I might have changed it, but you know me, I'm a one bracket guy. You can see all the scribbling. I had Iowa State losing to Illinois.
Okay.
That's kind of, I'm not sure of that one yet. I mean, but my first inclination was yes. And the reason I'm not sure of it is real simple, because Illinois plays without a point guard, a true point guard, Iowa State could be disruptive. So that's one where I might have made a little bit of a mistake. Auburn is interesting. I don't trust their backcourt.
Okay.
And that's why I see UConn getting past them.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's go to the South. This is Houston is the top seed in the South. Do you see roadblocks for them? The one team I did want to ask you about, sitting at 31-3, James Madison. People might not be too familiar with them. Do they have a chance to make a little bit of a run? What are your thoughts generally on the South bracket?
Yeah, first let's do James. James Madison had a great year. Obviously, Michigan State, they started this season with a great win. They're an old team. Start five seniors, four of them, I think, fifth-year seniors. Bickerstaff can really rebound the ball. I think he's a BC transfer, and Edwards is a dynamic guard. They get to the foul line. They pressure you. They're playing a team, though, to me, that I think is a bad matchup. Because this is not your father's, you know, Wisconsin. Chucky Hepburn's dynamic. AJ Stewart can score. Those big guys up front have a little nasty to them. They don't, you know, they play fast, so they get some easy baskets. So, I mean, I like James Madison. I think Biden's done a really nice job, but I don't see that. My big upset in this bracket is Texas A&M. I think that's a bad matchup. If they beat Nebraska, and Rick Mass is very good, and Tominaga is really fun to watch, and Williams can really run and rebound and do some great things, and I think that Fred's done a great job in terms of the offense that he run, but they've improved defensively. Not a great defensive rebounding team, though. Texas A&M, backcourt, Wade Taylor, Bootsy Radford, downhill, 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 get to the line, get to the basket, create plays, defensively, change your defenses, physical, rebound, rebound, rebound. If they win that game, they're beating Houston.
All right,
that's the one matchup that, even though Houston beat them already, what does Houston do? They get 33 points a game off their defense and off second chance points.
Yeah, yeah.
That could be an issue. So Duke gets by Vermont. I think I did it just again. I literally filled out this bracket in 5 minutes. We get it handed to us and we fill it out. So it's not a ton of deep thought. Here's my concern with Duke is do they do the tough things consistently enough? It's like in golf, do you get up and out enough to have a chance to win a tournament?
Right.
Do you do the tough things consistently enough? And, like Duke, they need an alpha. Like when I played against Duke, their huddles were really tight. I don't know who's the guy talking in their huddles right now. Start of the NC State game, John did a great job going inside to Filipowski. And Filipowski was just too soft. I tell the truth. I mean, so can they do the tough things consistently? I don't think even if they win those games, I don't think they beat either Houston or Texas A&M. I just don't think they're physically tough enough. NC State wins 5 games in 5 days. They lost the previous 5 games. Historic run in the ACC tournament. A historic run for the history of NC State basketball. Do they have anything left in them? Are they qualified and satisfied is the biggest question for them. Because if they're satisfied, they're going to get smoked. Because Texas Tech has a very good backcourt. Grant McCaslin's one of the best coaches in the conversation for coach of the year. They've had injuries. Washington's pretty good up front. Williams is a pretty good player. Kerwin Walton's a retread from North Carolina who can shoot it. If they're ready to play, State wins this game. I just think it's really hard to know if they're going to be ready to play with everything that's going on. I got Kentucky coming out of the bottom half of it. And that's all speculation. I got to be honest with you. It's speculation. Eventually, they're going to guard the ball. They did it in certain games.
Yeah.
They did it when they beat Florida the first time. They didn't do it the second time. They did it when they won at Auburn. They did it when they won at Tennessee. And they guarded no one in Texas A&M. Offensively, Shepherd, Dillingham, Reeves, tough. Adu brings some toughness. They got 21 feet of post player. I got it coming down to Kentucky and A&M in the rematch game. I got Kentucky winning that side of the bracket. Marquette, I'm worried about the health of Kolick.
Yeah. Just so people can hold me accountable, I have Houston coming out, but I have a lot of upsets. This is a little bit of a heart pick, but I have James Madison getting into that Sweet 16. And ooh, I do like the winner. I have the winner of that Boise-Colorado game making some noise, potentially getting to the Sweet 16.
Colorado's good. That's good research right there. Although I do like Florida. I know the Han Logden broke his leg, and that was emotional in the championship game. Florida's pretty good. That backcourt's good. Samuels is good. Congdon can stretch the defense a little bit. The guys that come off the bench have to embrace roles a little bit better. I think that's a little bit of a concern. Riley Kugel gets a little hot in terms of chasing shots. But, two good picks right there now. I like a man who's not afraid.
Yeah, thank you. Let's go to the Midwest. This is Purdue's region.
Easiest bracket.
Really? Because this – all right. Well, then you take it away. This was the one I struggle with, so I'm fascinated to hear your thoughts in this bracket.
Well, it is the easiest bracket. Kansas is not a four. I mean, you're a four right. When Hunter Dickinson might not be able to lift his arm above his shoulders, and Kevin McCullough's playing with banged-up knees. They're like 328th in bench minutes. They have no bench. If they're whole, they're a four. When they got smacked around in the Big 12 tournament, I mean, you can't keep them a four and not knowing if they're healthy. I don't think they have to drop that far. But, look, I have Purdue. I like Purdue. The Utah State TCU, I love Danny's. Danny's done a great job at Utah State. But I think TCU, even though they struggle down the stretch, can win that game. I like the Zags over McNeese. I know that's the hot pick. You know, they got a strong ass team. I understand that.
I like the Zags spot, too.
But I like the Zags. I think that the move to playing those three bigs together with playing through Graham Ike and inverting, bringing Greg away from the basket and Anton Watson freeing up Hickman, I think that's been good. I like a little bit of potential for Oregon making a little mini run. Now they haven't followed Dante healthy. They played really well. Look at the points per game allowed with Infalidante healthy and not there, giving up like seven fewer points, holding people to only 27% from 3-point line. That matchup with Kalkbrenner could be interesting, plus a little conspiracy with Dana Altman playing against his old school.
That's right.
But in the end, I got Tennessee and Purdue, and then I got Purdue getting out of there.
Okay. I have Tennessee and Gonzaga, and only because I have Jamie Dixon. I really respect the coaching job Jamie Dixon seems to do every year. I have TCU beating Purdue, and then Tennessee going on. I will say I would love to see Tennessee Creighton in the Sweet 16. I think that could be one of the best Sweet 16 games.
That'd be fun. Dalton Connect is a bad man.
Yes. Hell of a score.
He can't guard you, but he's a bad man offensively.
All right, so that leaves the West region. This is UNC as the top seed. I really curious what you're thinking here. The team that I kind of honed in on are the Baylor Bears, but I'm not sure how you feel about them. What are your thoughts generally in this region?
I get into the Sweet 16. Now, Baylor doesn't guard the way they have in the past. I mean, they just don't. They're not as physical on the defensive end. A lot of new pieces. Jalen Bridges has been good for them. You know, I got Carolina going all the way to the Elite Eight and then losing to Arizona. And that's going to be fascinating because you got obviously Caleb Love and RJ Davis and all the dynamic. It's a great lesson in anything in life and business. You can acquire talent, but that doesn't make you a team.
Yeah.
Because you had two guys. One guy was most outstanding player in the Pac-12. One guy was most outstanding player in the ACC. And together, they absolutely killed their team. So, I mean, both of them are in the right situation. I got a couple upsets in this thing, and I got one if you want to take a flyer on. I think St. Mary's is a flyer. Owned the tempo and rhythm of the game. Extremely physical, like crazy physical. Terrific offensive rebounding team. People talk about Mahaney. I talk about Marshall Onis. That's just me. And I think the other one is Dayton, Nevada. I like Nevada.
Okay.
I like Nevada. I like Blackshear as a big point guard that backs people down. Jared Lucas can make shots. Steve's team's got a little grit to him. Those are like the two. If Michigan State wins and plays North Carolina, I still have North Carolina winning, but they've got a little bit of the potential to bother them a little bit. Michigan State, I think Michigan State beats Mississippi State because of their bigs can't score Michigan State's, but they can give up 15 fouls and they're big and they can keep Tulu Smith off the glass, which is really important. And then as good as Josh Hubbard is, and he's great, the freshman, he's got to deal with Tyson Walker and Hogarth. Look, if Michigan State wins, if Malik Hall shows up, senior, Tyson Walker shows up, fifth-year senior, A.J. Hogarth shows up, senior, and Jay Nakin shows up. Those guys have to show up in the NCAA tournament. That's my mindset.
All right, so I have then you would have UConn versus Arizona in one of the semifinals, and then Kentucky against Purdue in the other semifinal. Who's getting through and who's cutting down the nets, Coach?
I got Kentucky and UConn, and the Congo's back to back. I think there'll be a quick preparation for Kentucky, who kind of loses their focus defensively. Too much cutting, too much ball movement, too much spacing. Size, roles are so well defined. People have that old book with the 2-minute manager. This is the 2-minute bracket.
Yeah.
Or it was the 1-minute manager. What was it? I forget the name of that book. I read it 100 years ago.
We agree. I have UConn. I have UConn.
We have a lot of company.
I know. That's. It scares me a little bit taking what I think is maybe the clear favorite. But, I had him beating Houston, which now I'm a little shaky on that Houston pick after listening to your reasoning.
Don't let me change your mind.
I'll hold.
You got to stick with your instinct.
Okay. All right. We'll hold firm there. Coach, this is a treat. Anything else that I failed to ask you that you want to let the people know about? Or
I just think the biggest thing is we need to embrace and enjoy what this tournament is, whether it's going to be 32 teams, 64 teams, 68 teams, it's not changing. My concern in my heart of hearts just is that embrace your teams. It's harder to embrace your teams now because you don't know who's on your team until September. Right. And that's if you ask about what the one worry is, you know, like boosters fall in love with their teams. It's hard to fall in love with your team and fans fall in love with their teams when there's free agency every single year. We have to. It's not even a debate. We have to find a solution to that because eventually we will lose fans. Yeah. And that's a problem.
Well said. I could not agree more with that. Coach, thank you for your time. Thank you for your insights.
You're the best,
as always.
Man, are you kidding me? I'm honored. I am honored. I'm all in on the No Laying Up crew. Come on now.
Well, that's very nice of you to say.
Your boy did a good job on the drums at the wedding, by the way.
For folks that don't know, Neil Schuster may have been at one of Coach's daughter's weddings recently. So I'm glad to hear, you know, he wasn't too drunk and he put on a good show with the drums. He is a very talented drummer.
I tell you one thing. I can't address the first in terms of adult beverages. I can't go there, but I can go to the fact that at some point, all of a sudden, my man was up there with the band just jamming. It was good content. And good luck to you guys because I know in a couple of weeks, a tradition like no other. I know you guys are going to be jamming in your own way, and you guys do an incredible job.
Very nice of you to say, Coach. Thank you very much. Enjoy the tournament. Have a great week. I look forward to watching you on television. And best of luck with the golf game this year. Stay healthy.
Yeah, I got to get locked in. I got to get the game locked in.
All right. All right. Take it easy, bro. Coach. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you.
Ziplock that, right on my waistline is why I kept that strap. I remember nights, I didn't remember nights. I damn near went crazy, I had to get it right.